Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy C. I'm from New York, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, June 10th, 2026. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We are in Chapter 4, We Agnostics. We are on page 44, the second paragraph. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Sarah G., 12 Traditions, Maria H., reader of the text is Tricia D., page 164, Sally A., our backup today, Elizabeth D., our newcomer greeter is Sim M., and our second hour host is Eileen M. The reference number for yesterday, Tuesday, June 9th, for our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,530. That's 23530. And for our 10 a.m. Eastern meeting, 23,532. That is 23532. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Sarah G. to please read the 12 steps. Come on in, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm now going to ask Maria H. to please come in and read the 12 traditions. Come on in, Maria.
Thank you, Kathy. Good morning. This is Maria H. in Georgia, compulsive overeater. 12 traditions. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Okay, here. 12 conditions, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, our loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Maria. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop on sharing what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic in the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes, and I'll be able to time you today. Singleness purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive or readers only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in Chapter 4, We Agnostics. We are on page 44. We're in the second paragraph that starts to when he feels to the end of the paragraph, easy alternatives to face. I now ask our Tricia D to please come in and start reading. Come on in, Tricia.
Good morning. This is Tricia D. from A Compulsive Overeater from Georgia. And this is the reading on page 44, second paragraph. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Pardon me. You know, reading this paragraph this morning, that really, you know, even this chapter, we agnostics, pardon me. You know, I never thought I was an agnostic, but this has become one of my favorite chapters because I had to admit, because I consider myself a Christian, but yet I know that I can't do this alone. But yet, I really realized that I had so much prejudice against certain people in certain denominations and institutions. And I was just, and that's part of my disease talking to me, is that, you know, I was going to be doomed to this alcoholic death because I thought I could still do it on my own. And that's what agnosticism is, without knowledge. He doesn't know that a power can help them. And I remember I allowed God to come into all areas of my life, but not my food. It was like, that's one room in my house that, I wasn't willing to surrender. And then I finally realized, as I prayed on my knees every day, for freedom from this disease. That I just, Lord, give me the desire to want to have the desire to surrender to you and to believe that I can trust you. That was a scary thing for me to give up my food. But this one sentence here is, do I want to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live? And that word live jumps out at me, live on a spiritual basis. Yes, there was that struggle within me, but I look back on my, you know, past 6 years that I've been with Vision, and I just, it has been the most wonderful life I've had since I've had been feeling this neutrality from the sugar and the flour and the obsession with myself. You know, doomed. Food was my master. I wasn't present to other people. So self-centered. And yet I felt like, you know, I can do this. And over, but I wasn't living. And then it says here to live on a spiritual basis. You know, that sentence right above it, only a spiritual experience will conquer. The page before, it says our defense must come from a higher power. It's repeated over and over. And what this beautiful 12 steps, and what newcomers are listening, it's the 12 steps of recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know we're celebrating the birthday today. It's freedom for me. You know, what am I willing to accept? I am now willing to accept, and I not only to accept it, I crave it. I know it's my air, it's the air I breathe. Not be focused on myself anymore. I want to grow. I want to get better. You know, there is a solution. Only God can rewire my heart and my thinking. And it is such a beautiful experience. And I have never known such peace and joy in knowing that the food was only a symptom. You know, the food was what led me to all the buildup of emotions in my mind, led me to the food. All right. Thank you so much, Kathy. Well, thank you for letting me share. And newcomers, just keep coming back. It does work if you work it. Thank you for letting me share.
Tricia, thank you so much for getting us started. If you came in late, we're on page 44, the second paragraph. I'm ready to take some names, and although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday of either meeting, we ask that you hold back. Please press star 1 to unmute yourself, and I'm ready for our first lineup.
Teresa A.
Teresa A.
Shannon.
Are you Teresa?
Rivka R.
Wow.
Suzanne M.
R.F.
Fantasy.
Janet A.
Leah
R.F.
Okay. Let me just give you who I have, because a whole bunch of people came in, so I'm sure I missed a couple. But this is who I have: Teresa, Pete, Rivka, Suzanne, Shanna, Janet, and Reva. Is there anyone
Leah?
Out there that?
Did you get
can
me
you say that again?
Yeah,
Leah
R.F.
Wow. Okay. I think I heard Melissa.
Did you get Nancy P?
And I'll stop with Nancy P. Okay, there we go. We're going to do the first nine there. Teresa, Pete, Rivka, Suzanne, Shanna, Janet, Reva, Melissa, and Nancy P. That's our first lineup. Teresa, please give us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in from, and please come in and share with us. Thank you, everybody.
Certainly. Good morning. This is Teresa A. in Silver Spring, Maryland. So good to be on the line this morning. So it says to one who feels that he is an atheist or an agnostic. You know, when I read this, it's you might think that for those who do not feel that they're atheist or agnostic, that they can kind of look at a balcony, be on a balcony and observe those who are atheist or agnostic. But the spoiler alert here is that you don't have to feel atheist or agnostic. You can feel like a believer. You can feel like a child of God. And still, it is it's a hard choice to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. And why is that? Because to be doomed to an alcoholic death, especially when you're in the food, that That is the easy path. That is the passive path. In order to live on a spiritual basic, it takes action and it takes work. And religious affiliation does not equal a spiritual awakening. And I can attest to that as a cradle Catholic, someone who from birth was born and raised in the church. It took this disease to bring me to my knees. It took this disease to show me that I was not living in a way that aligned with what I thought I believed. Why? Because I was being lulled into complacency. When we are doomed to an alcoholic death, it's because we don't want to do anything different. We don't want to take any action. But I don't want to be complacent. I want to grow. I don't want to be passive. I want to be active. And so that's why, you know, regardless of my religious affiliation, in order to live on a spiritual basis, it takes action, and it takes being awakened through what we do in the 12 steps. So I'm now glad to not only have a religious affiliation, but also a spiritual awakening that requires me to act each day to live on a spiritual basis. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you so much. That was Teresa A. from Maryland. Next up, we have Pete B., followed by Rivka, and then Suzanne. Come on in, Pete.
Thanks, Kathy, for taking the meeting. Appreciate your service. You're doing a great job. My name is Pete B., and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. Especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, right? This is a difficult, very, very difficult concept because we have a mental illness, if we are in fact alcoholic, compulsive overeaters, that insists we don't have the condition. Right? And the further away we get from that humbling and demoralizing condition that we get to when we hit what we think is our bottom when we come here, the further we get away from that, the more difficult it is to recognize that we are of the hopeless variety. That's why I really appreciate how the first paragraph opens up, right? Because, you know, we put so much emphasis on, you know, do I think like Bill Wilson thought? Do I eat like Bill Wilson ate? I mean, Frank, we put so much emphasis on this and this relating to other people, right? We tend to relate to the narcissistic, you know, just, you know, crazy stories and how how other people felt and whether or not that makes me a compulsive overeater. And this basically says one thing. Right. If when I want to stop, I can't, or once I start, I can't keep myself from stopping, then I'm probably an alcoholic. And if that's the case, then I have a progressive fatal illness that only gets worse, never better. So even if I'm a potentially of the hopeless variety, I'm actually of the hopeless variety. I have to recognize, and this is what the everything before we agnostics is telling us, is that we have this progressive illness that only gets worse, never better. And the only option we have is entire abstinence and a spiritual experience. But we can't get away from the fact that there's a serious, I don't look at areas of my life that I'm not being agnostic. I look at areas of my life that I'm being delusional. Delusional, like based upon the facts and my history, thinking that I could manage these other areas of my life is not being agnostic, it's being delusional. Because based on my history, based on the evidence, I've never been able to solve those problems on my own. And I've never been able to solve them with your help either. I have to base my life on the guidance and direction that I receive through inspiration and the connection I have with my higher power. This is telling me that left to my own devices and your devices as well, I am doomed to fail and live the life that I lived prior to becoming recovered, doomed to an alcoholic death or a spiritual basis. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks. Thank you so much. That is Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Next up, we have Rivka, Suzanne, and then Shana. Rivka, come on in and give us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in from, please.
Hi, good morning. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Maryland. And thanks so much, Kathy, for your service and all the shares so far. I haven't been able to be on a live meeting recently, but I've been listening to everybody, and so you're all close by every day, and I'm grateful that I can be here today. That last sentence, so to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Like, really? You know, I heard someone say once that, you know, ask any person, which do you prefer, to live a chaotic, miserable life and die a painful, miserable death, or live a happy, healthy, peaceful life of freedom and connection? Like, only an addict will say, well, let me think about it, you know. And I get that, you know, in the food. Like, it does seem like recovery is impossible. You know, and a lot of people get stuck on this spiritual experience thing, and I get that, too. It can seem impossible because, you know, it's not something I can fix and control. You know, it's something that happens when I surrender and my ego jabbering quiets down and I can awaken to a new reality. You know, and the big book doesn't talk about a particular belief. Like, it talks about awareness, awakening, and experience. And this disease, you know, it kept me in a trance, focused on myself and focused on food. And today, like, you know, all I need to notice is where am I being agnostic, or as Pete says, delusional, you know, because being agnostic and delusional means I'm not knowing, I'm not aware, I'm not experiencing life. I'm still in a trance about the reality of God. You know, I have to notice, you know, where I'm inserting my ego so I'm blocking the experience of my Creator. I do want to say that I am so grateful to Bill Wilson that he made it safe and inclusive for all people and all beliefs. Like, there's absolutely zero proselytizing in the big book of a particular faith. And I want to thank all the people in the line also who make it safe for everyone by not proselytizing. Because my faith teaches that God is one and God is everything, just as it says in the big book. And there's no other God besides the Creator, and the Creator fills all worlds and encompasses all worlds and is living and loving and benevolent and omnipotent and omniscient and beyond gender and form and, you know, beyond whatever my human brain can conceive of, you know. And when it says, you know, we're made in the image of God, that means we can exhibit God-like qualities because we all have a spark of our Creator within us. And we're all sons and daughters of a living Creator who wants us to turn to Him and trust Him and do His will for our benefit. And I love that it says that deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God, because that means that deep down in every man, woman, and child, there is our godly essence. That's our real
next
us.
Next time, Rivka.
Okay, so thank you so much, Kathy, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm just so thankful that I can be here today and that I can have that awareness today. So have a blessed day, everyone. I pass.
Thank you so much, Rivka R. from Maryland. Next up, we have Suzanne M., followed by Shannon and Janet B., and we're in Chapter 4, We Agnostics, page 44, second paragraph. Come on in, Suzanne.
Good morning, Kathy. Suzanne M. from Warminster, Pennsylvania. Thank you for your service and everyone who makes this meeting possible. It has truly saved my life. You know, I love the book, Big Book. It only says a million times in a million ways, spiritual basis is the only thing that's going to save me. My relationship with God, or higher power, whom I choose to call God. And without that, it says disaster. My life is disaster the minute I pick up at one of my alcoholic foods. You know, I've been in recovery a lot of years, not LA, you know, I'm dually addicted, as they say. And I have never experienced the spiritual connection that I have with my higher power today in all those years. You know, I listened for years to sponsors and people telling me what to do. And, you know, it's like we're talking about with an agnostic, like I believe what I believe and I'll take in this and that and maybe this. And it's so obvious to me that every piece of advice that I get from people in recovery, particularly in OA, works. You know, I have made it a serious change in the last 30 days. I've been, 10 steps every night, except last night I was exhausted, but for, 99% of the time every night, I'm starting my mornings. I am getting out of bed and making time for that meditation, which is something that's haunted me forever. And I am like living with God all through my day. My day is lovely. The other thing I was sharing on a meeting, I switched to 301, three meals, nothing in between, one day at a time. When I came in and heard that, I thought that was insane and there's no way I could do it. And like everything else, if I wait long enough, I end up doing it. And that has made my life so easy, so much more manageable, you know? And I don't know, like I said, without you all and every day I listen, and such amazing messages, such strong recovery here. And I truly credit my abstinence from my higher power and from all of you. So I love you all. And with that, I'll pass. Hello?
Kathy, can't hear you.
Hello, Kathy.
We can't hear you, Kathy.
Oh.
Is there somebody else that was supposed to talk? Go right ahead.
Okay. Hey, everybody. This is Shanna C., grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Thanks, everybody, for all the shares. And thanks, Kathy, for leading the meeting, if you can hear me. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis is not always easy alternatives to face. And that takes me back to, you know, how Abby was the person who carried the message to Bill W. Bill W. was sitting at the table drinking, and Eddie was sitting across from him. And while he was even drinking, he could see something had been inwardly rearranged in Eddie. And he could see that something was working in Eddie, even though at the time he was like, I feel probably too scared to admit it. But yet he was interested. You know, and I look back at all the times in my own life where I could see something at work in the people about me. And I was interested and curious, but almost at that point, is it really real? Is God really real? Can this really happen for me? I mean, it's happening in him. And so there's that thing inside that's saying, yes, it can. I see you and I hear you too. But then there's that other part of me that blots it out, that says, no, there's no way. Not me. You don't know what I've done. You don't know. It can't be. It's got to be. It's good for them, but it's not for me. Because I know what I am, and I know that I'll never be good enough for God. And I'm reminded of this story where he talks about his experience at the cathedral. He said, for a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. Bill said he came, said that there was a God that came to him. And he said that soon the sense of his presence, the presence of God, had come to him. It had been blotted out by many worldly clamors, mostly within myself. And I found how true has that always been for me? It's just, I can't, it's too good to be true, you know. And so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. But one of the things I'm so grateful for is that for me, what happened is I did get to that point where I was going to be doomed to a life of suffering, alcoholic death, whatever you want to call it. unless I was able to live by spiritual principles and I knew that I needed help in how to apply the powers of good that lay outside my synthetic knowledge. Even Dr. Silkworth talked about the application of the powers of good. And even in working with others, it talked about people that come in with religious beliefs, even though they're not wrong, it's just they're unable to apply the powers of good that enable them to not pick up the first bite or drink. So I'm so grateful for the 12 steps that enable me to apply the powers of good, that enable me to further come to believe that there is a power greater than me that wants to lift this awful obsession, this awful pain, from me, because I can't do it for myself. It has to be God. And I want the God that Bill saw in Ebby. That's the one I want. Thanks. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm back. That was Shanna C., I think from Tennessee. Next up, we have Janet B., followed by Reva. Come on in, Janet. Can I be heard?
Good morning. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So I can just imagine someone who doesn't believe in God and they're reading that line to one who feels he's an atheist or agnostic. And they're saying, wait, what do you mean if I feel it? Like, this is America. I get the right to be what I want. I am an atheist or agnostic. But the book says to one who feels he is. And later, at the end of Dr. Bob's Nightmare, the second to the last paragraph, page 181, he says, if you think you're an atheist and agnostic. And so it's like, wait, these people are telling me I may think I'm an atheist, agnostic. I may feel it, but I'm really not. Like, how can that be? And page 55 tells us, it says, yeah, we've seen spiritual relief, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true, right? Isn't that just like us? We'd rather be right than get healed. And then it says, my favorite lines in the book, actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It means that when God created me, along with like two lungs, one stomach, one heart, a couple kidneys, he planted the fundamental idea of himself. It's there in me, in us. Well, how come I feel there's no God? And then they tell us. It meaning the fundamental idea of God may be obscured, may be blocked by calamity, like bad things that have happened to me or other people. Pomp, worship of myself, worship of other things. You know, what's too important to me, like my kids, you know, whatever, like what are my idols? They say, but in some form or other, it is there. And then they tell us faith in this power greater than ourselves. Okay, well, that's great to get to the point to believe the miraculous demonstrations in that power. What are these miraculous demonstrations? The paragraph before tells us only a spiritual experience will conquer it. So if I'm an atheist or an agnostic, and I read this book and I see I have an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer, but what a spiritual experience is this God who I think I don't believe in will make his home in my heart and my life in a way which is indeed miraculous. This is all on page 25, and commence to accomplish for me what I couldn't do for myself. What couldn't I do for myself? Binging. What a powerful motive to believe in God, a God who loves me enough that in spite of all the rotten things I've done, will come and make his home in my heart and kick this food obsession to the curb. And that, nothing less, is what our program promises us. And I'm so, so grateful. With that, I cut.
Thank you so much. That's Janet B. from North Carolina. Just a reminder, we're on chapter 4, commenting on the second paragraph on page 44. The one he feels. Next up, we have Reva P., followed by Melissa C., and then Nancy P., and then after Nancy, I can take another lineup. Reva, please come in and share with us.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. So I don't think I was atheist, and I wasn't aware that I was agnostic in certain areas of my life. But this whole business that the spiritual experience would be the solution to the problem, that once I start, I can't stop, and when I stop, I can't stop from starting. It seemed impossible. It did seem impossible. And thank you, God, for the people who led me on the path to put down my alcoholic foods, ingredients, behaviors, and work the steps. And it was the torture and the misery and the pain, physical, emotional, I wasn't aware of the spiritual, but all that pain from the food that gave me the willingness when it came to the abstinence part. But when I read this sentence, to live on a spiritual basis or be doomed to an alcoholic death are not easy alternatives. Like, why not? And first of all, I only have two alternatives. There's only two. Either I do the spiritual basis program of action, or I die. That's it. Only two. There's no third option. No door number three. Why is it so difficult? And when I'm thinking about this, I'm not thinking so much about the food. For me, the food was a great persuader. What about once the food is down? To live on a spiritual basis or be doomed to the death when it comes to being ruled by self? Because I could white knuckle it for a little bit. You know, how about that, you know, dry drunk? That is misery. And that's another death. And I think for me, it's difficult because the self is so strong and the disease is such a great liar. Yeah, I need to be in pain again when it comes to what we call now the character defects, right? And there's so much fear. So thank God for step one. I'm powerless not just over food, but over all the other stuff that rules me, the fear, mainly the fear. And step one for me is I'm doomed, but step two is maybe not. Because, yeah, deep down inside of me, there is that fundamental idea of God. I need to do the work to unblock so I can access the power. And, you know, I'm sort of grateful for the pain because God makes me willing and I don't have to be in as much pain. He raises the bar. But I only have those two alternatives. And thank you, God, I choose for the most part to do the work and access the power when it comes to everything else that was underneath the food. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Reva P. from Toronto, Canada. Next up, I'm pretty sure I heard Melissa, and after Melissa, Nancy, and after Nancy, I could take some more names. Come on in, Melissa.
Hey, good morning, Kathy. It's Melissa C. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York, and, you know, I feel really emotional this morning, like listening to the reading and thinking about my own experiences, because I did think myself agnostic and atheist. I mean, that was my experience. I came in and out of Overeaters Anonymous hoping against all hope that I could do the job without God. You know, I didn't really want to believe in God. I had my own stories for why either there wasn't one or if there was one, he was, you know, like unimportant, and actually I believe that he like neglected me, you know, and that was my demeanor, that was my mindset. And then, you know, what I want to say today is, like, it's not necessarily my job to stand and yell and scream and tell people you have to believe in God, you have to believe in God, but I'm going to say, like, what God did for me. And here's what God did for me. He took someone who was convinced that there wasn't a God or a God that didn't love me. And he said, it's okay. Like, I see you and you're hurting and you're living your life this one way and it's not working. And you might say you don't believe in me, but when I cried out, like, God help me, here's what my God did for me. He put somebody in my path who I had known for years in my face-to-face meetings, so I avoided like the plague because she always talked about God. I thought she was one of those like overly religious, God-speaking people. You know, she worked a very rigid, in my mind, program. And that's who God placed right in my path.
you know, unsuspectingly today. And he took me from a life that I was living. I was not living by spiritual means. I was living by regular, you know, human, run-of-the-mill means. And it was failing me. And God picked me up and he put me in a brand new story. And so today I know that with absolute certainty, I'm not agnostic, I'm not atheist, because I know that God entered my heart and did the impossible. And that's the God that I believe in. He loves me. He cares for me. He saw how hurt I was, and he helped me change. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa C. from New York. Nancy P. is up, and after Nancy P., I can take some more names. We are on page 44 in Chapter 4, We Agnostics, second paragraph, To One Who Feels. Nancy, please come in and share with us.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P., recovered in Westgate, Massachusetts. The shares have been amazing. So then there's me, you know, like not on board. Because I think that I was thinking, you know, it says we agnostics without knowledge, and I need a chapter that says without knowledge and doesn't care either. Because I came out of the closet as an agnostic in the process of, you know, my final recovery, hopefully, my final recovery. It's been 8.5 years, but I don't take anything for granted. And, you know, I had a terrible case of contempt prior to investigation. You know, in my life, I have to make decisions sometimes quickly based on what's in front of me. And I had made the decision that that I didn't necessarily think that I was doomed to an alcoholic death, because unfortunately I had periods of sobriety that were, you know, where my body was the right size, and that said, see, you know, but finally, you know, one catastrophe after another, pretty quick succession, I asked a friend to help me, and she helped me, and I dialed into this meeting, and I have not had to hurt myself with food since that day. But I always thought that living a spiritual life meant, you know, like wild-eyed madness, writhing on the floor, foaming at the mouth, speaking in tongues at some tent revival. And I thought that was the only other way. But, you know, again, contempt prior to investigation. And what I found was, you know, when my sponsor, my vision sponsor, told me to, you know, shut the F up and listen, that's my main problem in life, is that I don't do that enough. You know, I found that there were other ways to become aware. And so I found that my life changed. Had I known what was in store for me, I might have done it a lot sooner, but I didn't, and that's fine as well. And, you know, today my life is second to none. And I'm agnostic. Like, I don't know if there's a God. I don't care. But one thing that I really believe, really, really, as though it's knowledge, is that if there's a God, it absolutely is fine with me not believing. It's similar, like if I said, well, I don't think the sun is, you know, I don't think the sun shines. The sun wouldn't care if it shined anyways, even on me. And so whatever it is that takes care of me, I have no interest. All I care about is that it works. And so I'll wrap up with this by saying that, you know, the most effective thing that I do, of anything that I do, is engage with other compulsive overeaters when times are good and when times are bad. And, you know, I recently, the other day, had to make some phone calls because of a terrible disappointment that I had, and I was comforted and saved by, you know, from sitting in a swampy pit of toxic waste by one person who said, imagine what the next instance of this situation would be, you know, when you next engage, and they saved me. And I'll be forever grateful for that. With that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. We have 11 minutes. I'd like to take four names and take less than three. Can you press star one if you'd like to share with us?
Vinny from New York City. Vinny S.
Thank you, Vinny.
Leah.
Leah,
RF. Monica Tucson. Monica T.
Okay, let's go with that and see if we could just go with the fourth, and we have 10 minutes now. Vinny, Leah, Ruth, and Monica. Vinny, come on in and share with us, please. Star one, Vinny. Vinny?
Do you hear me now?
I hear you.
Hello?
Now, Vinny.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the meeting. You're doing a great job. Thank you, everyone, for their shares today. I'm Vinny. I'm a compulsive overeater from New York City. This relates to me quite a bit. God, my higher power, agnostic or atheist. I always knew I had a God in my life. A lot of times I did not turn to him. I forgot that he existed. I ran on self-will. I didn't know that he was there for me. At times, because I chose not to. Whether I was overeating or dealing with stressful things, or anxiety was getting the best of me, or my food was getting the best of me, or my alcohol was getting the best of me, and dealing with situations, I couldn't turn to God because I wasn't as of same mind. I was totally innocent. Sanity set in for many years at times. Didn't realize it, but this program showed me that there is a higher power in my life, which he always did exist for me. And doubts and insecurities I had because my mind wasn't as of being sane in any way, situation at all, from what I had gone through, and we all go through things. But I am so grateful today that I have a higher power that is taking me to places beyond my belief. And the program does work one day at a time. I am so grateful for that. Grateful for basically a sponsor and the 12-step program in AA and OA, which kept me sober for quite a few years in the AA program. And still working on OA, but it's getting better. And I am truly grateful. Thank you so much for taking the meeting, and everyone have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, Vinny S. from New York. We have Leah, Ruth, and Monica. Leah, please give us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in from, please.
Hi, Leah R.F. That's R as in red, F as in falcon, calling from Lodi, California. And to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And I didn't realize that those were the two choices I had. And there really are only two choices for me. I can either be doomed to an alcoholic death or I can live on the spiritual basis. And I'm glad that I understand that that's what I'm working with now. Those are my choices. And like it said in the paragraph before, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And I didn't realize I get to have my own personal experience, my own personal spiritual experience in this program. For me, I always considered myself a spiritual person, but my beliefs did not mesh in nicely with any religion that I found out there. For me personally, having a heavenly mother, having a female presence in my higher power was of equal importance of having a heavenly father for me. And so that idea, based on my upbringing, felt blasphemous to me. And so I just kind of swept the whole idea under the rug and didn't really explore any deeper. And OA lifted that rug up and told me basically, go ahead and explore. Go ahead and dive into that relationship. Look at that higher power as you perceive it, as you want to look into it. And so now that I've been given that permission to explore my higher power, the relationship that I'm developing is really beautiful. Prior to OA, I didn't pray. I didn't meditate. I maybe prayed once every 3 months as I fell asleep, and then fell asleep mid-prayer and then rinse and repeat, you know, a few months later. And now I start my day that way with prayer and meditation. I try to end my day with it. I'm becoming, way better at doing that.